views and opinions on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Oldies 1079, WOLD, or SRN Communications.
It's time now for Here's the Thing, a show that's all about you with your host, Lauren Cardinal, a board-certified hypnotist and results coach. If you're looking to make a positive change this year, learn lifelong tools to reduce stress and be present. If you're stuck and need to remove the blocks that are from success and happiness in the areas of your life, or if you want to get a new perspective on things, well, it's time to talk to Lauren Cardinal. To talk to Lauren, call 732-748-1079. That's 732-748-1079. And now, here's your host, Lauren Cardinal.
Good evening, and thank you for joining me for Here's the Thing. I am your host, Lauren Cardinal. If you want to change your life, it starts with changing your mind. Thank you for listening live now on Oldies 107.9 WOLD. Now serving even more of Central Jersey at 95.1 FM, and recordings of the show being played on 97.5 FM in Sussex County on Saturday mornings. This show, Here's the Thing, is about you and for you. And each week, I or we discuss relevant, timely topics so you have more tools to help you live a better, more fulfilling life. I am a certified life coach and a clinical hypnotherapist, and we talk about what's important to you. So in the meantime, thank you for listening live, and thank you to my podcast listeners. I'm really excited to be with you here tonight. I want to welcome all of my new listeners as well as my regular listeners. Tonight's show is really exciting for me, which makes me excited for you. If you're familiar with the show, I usually end the show with a quote or two. Tonight, I'm going to start with a short poem as the introduction. And it goes like this. An invisible thread connects those who are destined to meet, regardless of time, place, or circumstance. The thread may stretch or tangle, but it will never break. May you be open to each thread that comes into your life, the golden ones and the coarse ones, and may you weave them into a brilliant and beautiful life. And this is an ancient Chinese proverb and comes from originating with the Chinese legend and also in Japanese, that the gods tie an invisible red string around the ankles of those that are destined to meet each other in a certain situation or help each other in a certain way. So tonight, I am thrilled to be speaking with author Laura Schroff to discuss her book, An Invisible Thread. Laura will be joining me in just a few moments, and I am just thrilled to have her here. So first off, tonight's show is brought to you by Full Recovery Wellness Center. Full Recovery is located in Fairfield, New Jersey, and whether you're struggling to get clean and sober, or if you're a 12-step old-timer or a family member of a recovering alcoholic or addict, the Full Recovery Wellness Center offers the tools needed to succeed in recovery and in life. They have a dedicated and caring staff that understands that addiction is a complex illness. It has biological, genetic, psychological, social, and developmental roots, and their treatment targets this entire range of factors. And their goal is simple: provide the tools that help people in recovery to enjoy a rich and rewarding life. Full Recovery offers outpatient and intensive outpatient treatment programs, as well as a free family dynamic workshop series. They focus on the individual and the family to integrate recovery principles and spiritual concepts with leadership, relationship, and career skills to guide individuals to a life of contribution and prosperity. For more information, you can reach them at 973-244-0022. That's 973-244-0022. Or find them online at full-recovery.com. And as a reminder, I offer HIPAA-compliant video, hypnosis, and coaching sessions, as well as phone sessions for coaching. If you'd like to meet, but the distance is prohibitive, we can make it work. You can reach me through my website, Facebook, or give me a call at 973-418-2170, and we can set up our session. If you'd like to receive my newsletter, it goes out every week on Thursdays. It's called Here's the Thing on Thursday. You can go to my website's contact page, or you can send me an email to lauren@laurencardinal.com. Now, last week's show was part two of our discussion about addiction, and it was with my interview with Brian McAllister from Full Recovery Wellness Center. And Brian discussed some of the statistics of addiction, the treatments, and the approach at Full Recovery Wellness Center. Brian also shared his new product, which is about to be released, called the Virtual Recovery System. And it's an app that works with those who are recovering or considering going into recovery, works with them on a 24/7 basis through the use of the phone. It begins with an assessment, provides tools for engagement and support all day long, connects people immediately to their helplines when they are in the moment of needing that, and tracks progress so individuals can better experience visually the progress that they're making. It certainly is a thought-provoking approach, and if you missed the show or if you'd like to hear it again, you can find that podcast as well as all of my previous shows' podcasts on my website, www.laurencardinal.com, or through iTunes. Okay. In addition to welcoming listeners on 107.9 and 95.1, I'd like to welcome the Sussex County listening audience to the show. On WRSK 97.5, broadcasting pre-recorded shows from Sussex County Community College on Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 a.m. And as always, you can listen to the live show on the internet at WOLDradio.com, through the TuneIn Radio app on your Android phone, or the free Apple device app. On with the show. I'm so excited to get to this point so we can begin our conversation. A little bit of background. Laura Schroff, an international and number one New York Times best-selling author and keynote speaker, is a passionate and compelling voice on the power of small acts of kindness and mentorship. Laura has fully committed herself to advocating and inspiring others through her books, which are An Invisible Thread, An Invisible Thread Christmas Story, and Angels on Earth. As a keynote speaker at over 200 events, Laura encourages her audience to look for their own invisible thread connections and highlights the importance of opening up their eyes and hearts to the opportunities where they can make a difference in the lives of others. Since the launch of her first book in November of 2011, An Invisible Thread has been on the New York Times bestsellers list for a total of 39 weeks and is the recipient of many prestigious awards, including a Christopher Award, a Dreamcatcher Award, a local hometown hero award presented by New York Congressman Steve Israel, a Literacy Heroes Award, and a finalist for a Books for a Better Life. In 2014, Laura spoke at LeaderCast alongside Archbishop Desmond Tutu, former First Lady Laura Bush, and best-selling author Malcolm Gladwell. And it would seem that Laura did not set out early on to be a writer of books, and I think that's fair to say. She followed her career in advertising sales, working with several major media companies, including Time, Condé Nast. She was born and raised on Long Island, New York, and Laura was part of the advertising team that helped launch and make USA Today a successful national newspaper, before helping launch three of the most successful startups, Time Incorporated history, InStyle, Teen People, and People Style Watch. She was also the New York division manager at People Magazine. Laura has been the New York ad manager at Ms. Magazine and associate publisher at Brides. So from advertising sales to writer, and from New York to right where you're listening right now, I would like to welcome Laura Schroff.
I am here, and thank you so much for your very lovely, lovely introduction. I really appreciate it.
So welcome, welcome. So excited to have you here and share your book.
And I'm really excited to be on your show, and I very much appreciate it, so thank you.
You're welcome. Well, I'm quite sure that I'm not the only one to say that I connected with the story in Invisible Thread and the book on so many levels. And I expect that while many are already familiar with the book, but for someone who does not yet know of your work, what would you say about An Invisible Thread?
Well, you know, when An Invisible Thread came out, I never could have imagined it would resonate with hundreds of thousands of people all across the country and actually even now around the world. I feel so incredibly blessed to be on this journey and to have the opportunity to speak about the power of small acts of kindness and how we can all make a difference in the life of another person if sometimes we just pause for a moment and, as you said earlier on, recognize our surroundings to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about your relationship with Maurice.
Well, you know, I met Maurice back in 1986, and at the time I was working at USA Today. And I was single. I was looking for more in my life, but I wasn't sure what it was. And one day as I was walking up my street, I passed this young boy, and he said, "Excuse me, lady, do you have any spare change? I'm hungry." And my original reaction was to say no, and I did say no, and I walked away. But then as I walked away, what I realized and what resonated for me were those three words, "I'm hungry." And I ended up going back to him, and I said to him, "Listen, I don't want to give you any money, but if you're hungry," I said, "I'll take you over to McDonald's, and I'll get you something to eat." And what's interesting is Maurice was really surprised, because more often than not, people treated him as if he were invisible. At the time when I met him, he was only 11 years old, and he had no choice but to fend for himself. Unfortunately, his mother, Darcella, whom he loved dearly, was addicted to heroin and crack, and his father left when he was only 6. So here he was on the street, just trying to put together enough money to get something to eat. So we went over to McDonald's, and we had lunch together, and that was the very first time we met.
Amazing. And obviously, reading the book, you talk about your relationship and how it's grown over the years. I wonder, what was the catalyst for you to write the book and to write the story about your relationship with Maurice?
Well, you know what? I spent my career, and you were so eloquently mentioned, in advertising. So I was never a writer, but as more and more people learned about our story, because after we had lunch that day, we ended up going for a walk to Central Park, and when we came out, I asked him if he wanted some ice cream, and he looked over at Haagen-Dazs, and he said, "Oh," he said, "designer ice cream?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I guess so." And we had some ice cream. But then throughout the week, and then we went our separate ways, but throughout the week, I couldn't seem to get him out of my mind. And so on Thursday night after work, I decided to see if I could try to find him. And unbeknownst to me, that night, he was really hungry, and he thought maybe if he stood on the same corner, he would see me again, and I would offer to take him to dinner. And as I turned the corner, there he was standing. I asked if he was hungry. He told me he was starving. So we went to McDonald's, and while we were having dinner, I said, "I've got a great idea." I said, "Why don't you meet me on the corner next Monday night, and I'll take you out to dinner again." And we met for dinner that following Monday, and we wound up meeting every Monday for the next 4 years and hundreds of times thereafter. And people would say to me all the time, "You should write a book, write a book." And I was like, "Write a book? It's just the story of our unlikely friendship." And it really wasn't until 2007 when I took an early retirement package and I moved to Florida for just 6 months. I ended up moving back to New York. But I had free time, Lauren, so I decided during that time I would actually try to write the book. And one night I sat down and I wrote out an outline and I started writing an invisible thread. What's interesting, though, is my original outline, I never planned to talk about my own childhood, and it was not until I was writing the Mitt story. So for those of your listeners who have read An Invisible Thread, that Mitt story, which talks really about my brother Frank and his Mitt, was something I had never planned to incorporate into the book or any part of my own childhood. And before I knew it, I started to intertwine not only our story, but also as a back end, my own childhood.
And there are so many parallels, really, aren't they?
You know, there tends to be, and it's so interesting because before I wrote the book, I never really acknowledged those parallels. I mean, there were certain things that I knew that I wanted to do. I knew as a child I always really wanted to have structure in my life because that was something I did not really have, and I thought it was really important. One of the reasons why I think I always did really well in corporate America was because there was just so much structure, and I loved it. So I really wanted to incorporate structure into our friendship. So that's one of the reasons why we would get together every Monday night. And we ultimately got together, you know, on weekends as well and other times throughout the week. But we always had this standing day of, regardless, we would get together on Monday nights.
I can appreciate that interest for structure. And I'm sure that worked well for Maurice, too, who was in a position where structure worked well for him as well.
He He actually loves having some structure in his life. Mm-hmm. He also loved having someone who seemed to care about him. He would love to come over on our Monday nights and have dinner, but one of his, probably his most favorite things to do was to bake chocolate chip cookies.
And of course, who could blame him?
Yeah, I know. But I didn't bake the chocolate chip cookies from scratch. I did the Toll House, you know, the dough. You cut it up into quarters, put the cookies into the oven. And
oh, the kids love
you know,
that.
12 minutes later, the cookies come out of the oven and the chocolate chips are melted, and he would absolutely love having his warm chocolate chip cookies with a big glass of cold milk.
Mm-hmm.
So we also tried to incorporate really fun things into our schedules when we would get together on Monday nights.
That's great. Fantastic. Now, your book dedication reads, "To all the children like Maurice, whose lives are harder than we can imagine, never lose hope that you can break the cycle and change your life, and never stop dreaming, because the power of dreams can lift you." And for the work that I do, I appreciate that sentiment so much. It's what we talk about so often on the show, that thought precedes form. And if you can imagine it, it can be achieved, because your mind would not conceive of things that were impossible to you. It just doesn't happen that way. What holds us back is our beliefs that are formed when we are between the ages of 8 and 12 years old. And I believe that Maurice's future, as you've described, was pretty dire when he was 11, 12 years old, for his beliefs as much as his situation or condition, and you helped him change that. And from where I sit as a hypnotherapist and working with people who have experienced trauma and maybe not similar situations, but certainly the same level of trauma, that helping him to change his beliefs about what he is capable of has allowed him, obviously, to open up to another way of life that's just amazing. And I don't know, I guess there's a part of me that, from the work that I do, that I wonder if how you are able to synthesize that and really understand what an impact that is. Somebody's beliefs. It's amazing, really. It's just amazing.
Well, you know, I used to say to all my friends and even my family when I first met Maurice, and I really do believe this, if we could all walk in the few steps of a young boy who is 11 years old that lives mm-hmm. in a welfare hotel in one room with his mother, his grandmother, his two sisters, his aunt, two baby cousins and uncles who came and went, with only two single beds and no bedding, pillows, or blankets. In one corner there was a chair, and on the opposite side sat a half of a refrigerator with a television that sat on top, with only a box of baking soda and water in the refrigerator so the adults could cook the drugs throughout the night and then sleep the day away. If we could all walk in the shoe steps of children who live these kinds of lives, and there are so many, we would all not only better understand how difficult their lives are and how hard it is to break those cycles, but also, too, to appreciate the love, the goodness, and the simple things that we have in our lives and we take so for granted.
Mm-hmm.
I used to think about that all the time, you know, and it wasn't until I took Maurice out to Long Island to my sister's house, my sister Annette, and she, at the time, still does. She has three children with her husband, Bruce, but all the children were about the same age, and Maurice was really excited to go out to Long Island, but he had never been outside of New York City. He had never really walked on a lawn, you know, where there were homes.
Mm-hmm.
And driving home that night, I asked him, you know, what his favorite part of the day was. And he told me he thought it was great playing on the swings with Colette, Brooke, and Derek. He also loved going for a bike ride with Derek. But he said to me, you know, Miss Laura, he said, someday, he said, when I grow up, I want to have a room just like that. I said, what room? He said, you know, that fancy room where we had dinner. I said, oh, I said, well, that's called the dining room. I said, why? He said, oh, he said, Miss Laura, he said, I thought the food was great. He said, but what I loved so much was how everyone was laughing and talking. He said, and someday, mm-hmm. he said, I want to have a room just like that, and I want to have a dining room table. And, you know, we take sometimes for granted how lucky we are to sit around mm-hmm. a table with our families mm-hmm. and just talk and share our stories from the days. And yes. here was this child, and that was a turning point in his life. In fact, when you walk into Maurice's apartment today, he doesn't have a living room. He has a dining room with a large dining room table.
Mm-hmm. A happy place. His happy place.
Yes, uh-huh.
The place where he connects. He can stay connected. There's so much about that connection and the place where we can do that, and that is his place. And we are all connected. We are all the same. And you mentioned about the appreciation for what we have and the experiences that Maurice went through. And I've said it several times. I don't know if it's something that I repeat very often, but I feel that if we were given the exact same background and circumstances as any individual, there's nothing that says we wouldn't behave or react or respond in the same way as they are. And for that, I feel we're all the same. Human emotions are the same. It's the experiences and how we process. We're all connected.
But also, too, how we all can make a difference if mm-hmm. we choose to want to.
Mm-hmm. So you changed Maurice's life in a very visible and tangible way. And you mentioned about how he changed your life. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
You know, yes, I will, Lauren. Thank you. People used to say to me all the time, wow, Maurice is so lucky to have met you. And I used to say all the time to people who would say that, I was so lucky to have met Maurice, because Maurice really helped me appreciate all of the blessings that I did have in my life. Now, I grew up in a very volatile household as well, but I certainly couldn't compare my childhood to the hard life that Maurice faced, because I never, ever had to worry about where my next meal would come from or, you know, if I had a warm bed to sleep in. Both of my parents would have, you know, worked three jobs if they had to make sure there was enough food on the table. And, you know, mm-hmm. I say this all the time, that my father was a really good man, and he had a very big heart. But unfortunately, when my father drank, his darkest demons would come out, and he would become extremely volatile, not only with my mother, but also with my poor younger brother, Frank. And so I was brought up in a pretty chaotic world as well, but again, not as nearly chaotic as Maurice's life. But after I met Maurice, one of the things that he taught me the most was the gift of forgiveness. He really opened up my eyes to how lucky I was to have had a mother in my life. And, you know, my mother unfortunately passed away at the very young age of only 47 when I was 25. But my mother was, you know, the rock in the family, and she was the glue that kept it all together. And he actually really helped me appreciate the childhood that I did have. And, you mm-hmm. know, people think so often that, you know, when you're the one that is the giver, it's the receiver that's getting everything, and, you know, the giver's not really getting anything in return. And I actually believe, in many cases, it's the giver who is actually getting the most by mm-hmm. giving to the receiver.
Mm-hmm. There certainly is the reciprocity, if nothing else. You know, and it's interesting, I was going to ask you about how you've described a heartfelt connection between two people who needed each other, and to ask why you needed Maurice, but you just answered that question for the forgiveness that you needed for your own childhood.
Yeah, and he came into my life at a time where I truly believe I needed more in my life. It was always mm-hmm. my dream to have a family of my own, and that was not meant to be. And then one day Maurice came into my life, and I believe he came into my life for a very special reason, because I needed more in my life, and I believe that Maurice needed more in his life. And I have always really believed that my mother, again, who passed away when I was only 25 years old, has always been my guardian angel high in the sky and watching over me. And I have no doubt that she knew that we needed each other, and she mm-hmm. brought us together.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that in the book, my eyes and ears definitely perked up when I when I read that. And it's interesting that you said that, because one of the thoughts that I had is to ask if you've seen or experienced your mother at other times in your life.
Well, I believe my mother's with me every single day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I choose to believe that. I choose to believe that my mother does show me signs. And I think that she shows me these signs through beautiful rainbows and through different ways. But I also had a dream of my mother, God, and this goes back. It was about 6 months after she passed away. And, you know, some people would call it a dream. I called it a visit. And mm-hmm. It was the night before I had an interview. And I was really excited about this job, and unfortunately, the night before my interview, I ended up cutting my finger, and I ended up in the emergency room, and it was, again, only 6 months after she died, and it was the first time, of course, I'd been in a hospital after she passed away. And that night, I had this dream, and she came to me, and she basically told me not to worry, that I was going to get the job, and it was the most beautiful visit. And I can still remember, you know, feeling her tears on my face and feeling her arms around me. And I know that my mother's with me all the time, and it brings me enormous peace to know that. And I feel very lucky to have that kind of a faith.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful, because that peace and that gratitude really makes a difference on a daily basis.
In fact, after Angels on Earth, my third book, came out, I was driving to a speaking engagement, and it was my first speaking engagement. And I talked to my mother all the time, and I was telling her I was really excited, but it was, again, my first big speaking engagement. And I said, it would just be so nice if I knew that you were with me. And I got to Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and there were a lot of littles there as well as bigs. And this one little girl kept looking at me, and I finally walked over to her, and I knelt down and I said to her, hi. I said, we keep locking eyes. I said, my name is Laura. I said, what is your name? And she looked at me with this beautiful, dark, curly hair and these deep brown eyes. And she looked at me and she told me her name was Maria. And what's so interesting is my mother's name is Marie, but some people called her Maria and others called her Mary. And in that instant, I knew it was my mother's way of showing me that she was with me. And as you mentioned, Lauren, I've probably spoken at well over 200 speaking engagements, and every single speaking engagement I go to, there's always a Marie, a Mary, or a Marie in the room, and it has never failed.
That's fantastic.
It's amazing.
I love that.
It's amazing. In fact, I was going to an event out on Long Island. It was a Jewish synagogue, and I said to my mother, well, this is going to be a little bit of a problem, I said, because there's not going to be any Maries, Marys, or Marias in this room. And as I was signing the books at the very end, I kept waiting to hopefully find a Maria, but I knew it was pretty near impossible. And at the very end of the line, the third woman from the end, she put her book down, and we kept looking at each other as well. And I said, oh, I said, well, what's your name? And she said, my name is Marie. I said, are you kidding me? I said, what are you doing in a Jewish synagogue? And she said to me, oh, she said, I go to St. Agnes. I came here with a friend.
Fantastic. Oh, that's great. I love to hear that. Fantastic. Laura, we're just coming up on the halfway point in the show. Can you believe it?
I can't believe it. Wow, that went really fast.
I know. So I just want to take a quick break, and then we'll come back to continue the conversation about an invisible thread.
Would love
Laura
that. Thank you. Thank you, Laura.
Okay. Be right back. Did you know there's a world-class addiction treatment center that accepts most insurance right in Fairfield, New Jersey? The Full Recovery Wellness Center offers substance abuse help with flexible day and evening options. Overcoming addictive behavior is really just the beginning of recovery. The Full Recovery program offers a holistic approach to improve all areas of your life, from strained relationships to difficult career and financial situations. At Full Recovery, the goal is simple: provide you the tools needed to enjoy a rich and rewarding life. Full Recovery is now offering its exclusive Badge of Honor program, a treatment solution designed to meet the unique privacy needs of New Jersey's first responders and police officers. When relapse is not an option, turn to the state licensed professionals at the Full Recovery Wellness Center, located at 87 Fairfield Road in Fairfield. For more information, 973-244-0022 or at www.full-recovery.com. Full Recovery Wellness Center in Fairfield.
And now, back to Here's the Thing, a show that's all about you on WOLD. And your host, Lauren Cardinal, a board-certified hypnotist and results coach. If you'd like to speak to Lauren, you can call in at 732-748-1079. That's 732-748-1079. Let's get back to the show with your host, Lauren Cardinal.
Thank you for joining me, and welcome back. If you're just tuning in, it is Here's the Thing. I'm your host, Lauren Cardinal, and tonight I am speaking with Laura Schroff, author of An Invisible Thread, the story of her relationship with, at the time, who was a young gentleman named Maurice, who was living on the streets, so to speak, panhandling for food, and how she met him and grew with him over the years and how their relationship developed. We were just talking about Laura's experience in having visits from her mother who had passed at any of her speaking engagements and book signings. And I wonder, Laura, if in that vein, what about any visitations or experiences from your father? Anything there?
You know, no, not really. Occasionally, I think I'll see a sign that my father is showing me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to say that I guess my father passed away in 1988. So I was still really in my 20s, and I actually, in my very early 20s, did finally had a falling out with him, and so I didn't talk to my father, unfortunately, for a couple of years, and then unfortunately he did pass away. But I really do believe that my father understands that he didn't live the life that he was supposed to live on Earth, and I forgive him. You know, I believe sometimes my father, I truly believe my father did the best that he could, but I don't think he did it,
and certainly not the best he thought that he could.
Yeah, and you know, my father was tormented, and you know, and when I say that when he was good, he was great, he really was. And when he was terrible, he was terrible. But for some reason, my father was tormented, and I don't think that that was really his fault. You know, this was so long ago. I wouldn't be surprised if he had some kind of an imbalance, and certainly when he drank, it brought the worst out in him. You know, thank God he was the kind of person, at least when he didn't drink, he was great. He was really sweet and loving, and it was only really when he drank that he became really violent. But he was addicted to alcohol. I mean, he was an alcoholic, even though he was a complete functioning alcoholic. And, you know, there were many times where all of a sudden he would quit, and he'd quit for a couple of months, but then slowly he would go back. But it wasn't like he was violent all the time.
And that going back, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, we had a two-part series on addiction, that that support in going back to the life that you know and not doing the behaviors that you were doing is extremely difficult, and that's often where the support really needs to come in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, from what I read in the book, it sounds like the pattern did not continue with you or anyone else in your family. Is that correct?
Well, my poor brother Frank, I have to say, you know, he was really tormented throughout his entire life. And
oh, Frank,
you know,
I know Frank.
My poor sweet brother Frank, and he passed away at the age of 42 years old. He did have, at times, a drinking problem, but, you know, he was tormented from our childhood. He was the one that came out clearly the most troubled from it, and and rightly so. But
absolutely,
my other brother Stephen, my youngest brother, I was 12 when my mother had my brother Stephen. I still remember. It was really funny because my father called to say that my mother had a baby, and it was a baby boy, and he was a really big boy, a really big boy. He weighed 8 pounds, 9 ounces, and he was 21 inches, and everyone kept saying he was really big. So, of course, when my mother brought him home, I expected this really big baby. And I can still remember thinking, oh, my God, it's the smallest little baby I've ever seen. And I was attached to my mother's hip. I couldn't do enough for my brother, Stephen. And what's really wonderful is we're still really, really close today. So, no, he does not drink. My sister Nancy is married, and she has a beautiful family. And my sister Annette's been married for, God knows, almost 50 years, and she has 3 wonderful children. And I'd like to believe that we really were able to take the best of my parents, and we decided to leave the worst behind.
That's fantastic. And that forgiveness really is the release. I mean, people often talk about forgiveness as almost letting somebody off the hook, and it's so much more than that. It's really freeing yourself from that anger which holds us back.
Yeah, and I will speak just for myself. I know that when I haven't seemed to get it right. I've been married and divorced twice, so I haven't figured that out yet. But the one thing I remember very clearly, even when I started dating at a very young age, in my 20s, I knew I never, ever wanted to date someone who drank.
That makes sense.
Completely open, conscious of that. In fact, when I married my first ex-husband, when I went to his family's house for dinner, I actually remember watching his father and watching how much he drank. I mean, I was determined that I was never going to have a life like that again. So I think that sometimes, you know, when you're brought up in an unhealthy environment, you still have to be really conscious and be aware that your environment was unhealthy, and to know that it's something that you don't want to do and you don't want to relive over again.
Sure, and to make those
active
choices.
My sister Annette did not marry a man with a temper, and my sister Nancy didn't either. You know, it was just, we just made a very, we made conscious decisions that this was not the kind of life we wanted to relive again in our adulthood.
Right, and that perspective is very perceptive. It's a very mature approach. Now, you mentioned your brother Frank.
Yeah.
And I'll just touch on this quickly because there's so many good things. But I wonder if you've gained any experience, any understanding from the experience and the perspective regarding your father's relationship to Frank.
No, I really haven't. And I have to honestly say I wish that my father were alive, because I really do wish that I could ask him how he could have been so cruel to any of his children. What's so amazing to me is my father was a bartender, and he worked nights. And most nights after work, he came home. But there were those nights where he decided to stay and have, you know, a couple more drinks, and God knows how many it would be. And why, when he got home, he would decide that he needed to be either abusive to my mother or to, you know, my poor younger brother, Frank. As young as, you know, 4 years old. And, you know, I believe my mother did the best that she could. She tried her hardest, and it had to be very, very difficult for her. But my parents had a fight. I'll never forget it. I was about 12 years old, and my father, it was in the morning, and he had had a really terrible hangover, and I think it's fair to say that he practically broke the entire house, and my mother was able to get us out of the house, and we went to my grandmother's house, and we stayed with her mom and her father for 3 days. And I remember on the third day of being there, pardon my throat, I'm just recuperating from the flu, my grandmother sent my mother home, and I remember crying and asking my grandmother for us to please stay. I didn't want to go back. And my grandmother basically insisted that my mother's place was with her husband, period, point blank. And that was it. And she sent us home. So, you know, where was my mother to go in the 1950s with five small children when not even her own mother understood the dangerous environment that we were in? But my poor brother Frank, I don't understand why my father chose to pick just on him. That's the crazy thing. It's not like
I know
on any of us. Just Frank. Why? How could you do that? You know, the mid story is, it's so interesting. I was able to write it, but I still have a hard time talking about it. But how he came home and he realized that my brother Frank, by mistake, had played with his slide ruler and broke it. And the next thing he knew, he went into my brother's room and he took his most favorite thing that he owned, his baseball mitt. And he was 6 years old. He was just a baby. And he took the mitt into the garage and cut it up into pieces. And I remember calling my mother because she was working. It was on a Sunday, and telling her she needed to get home. And she left work and she came home. You know, my father had fallen asleep. And my poor brother Frank was in his room, you know, crying. Like, why did you do that? I would love to ask my father. No, I have not been able to ever understand it. And unfortunately, it's not until I see him someday will I be able to ask him why. Yeah, no. It makes no sense to me, and it really, honestly, it doesn't make any sense to my brother Stephen or even to my sister Nancy or my sister Annette. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I'll never
understand. I wonder if
it.
There's even a portion of it that Frank took on all of that to spare you, the rest of you, to go into that. But we won't, we don't know.
It's
there's something in your father.
Yeah, it was something in my father, and it's something we'll never really understand. And I hope that someday, you know, I'll be able to better understand it, because I wish he were alive that I could say to him, why? Why did you do that? How could you do that?
Yeah.
Really more the question, how?
And fortunately, you did experience that break to go over to your grandmother's, and you mentioned that you had your friend Sue. The experience that you had at her house, a peace, a calmness, a certainty or security. And how fortunate to be able to feel that as well. And it sounds like, when I was reading the book, that it seemed that's exactly what you were giving Maurice.
You know, without even really knowing it, that was kind of what I was trying to do, was kind of recreate. I loved sleeping at my friend Sue's house, and I know that I used to get the great night's sleeps there, because at least when I went to sleep, I didn't have to worry about what would happen in the middle of the night. I mean, I never really did all that well in school, and I talk about this in when I speak at schools. I was a terrible student, and I was a terrible student because I was always afraid to go to sleep for fear of what would happen in the middle of the night. So when I'd go to school, I'd always be completely exhausted. When we were graduating from high school, all my friends were going off to college, and I was like, I'm done with school. I barely got through school. And the one thing that I truly believe, and I think that this is really my father, that I did get from we all got from my father, was this incredible work ethic. And even though I did not go to college, I always kind of seemed to be goal-oriented, and I had always this incredible work ethic, which always helped me get to where I wanted to go. But Sue's family, for me, was what I perceived as really normal. I mean, I loved Mrs. Trebbing, and I'd come down in the morning, and she would have all the orange juice glasses lined up and vitamins next to the orange juice, and she always had a skirt on, and she, you know, kind of like a Donna Reed. And I loved sleeping at Sue's. You know, Sue's father worked for IBM. He wore a suit and walked out of the house with a briefcase, and I just always thought that was so cool.
Sure, it was a classic
Maurice
picture.
I tried to give Maurice some kind of normalcy in his life as well. I mean, he loved simple things like even helping me load the dishwasher. He had never seen a dishwasher before. I mean, I remember one night he said to me, oh, Miss Laura, he said, I'm going to dump the garbage. Nice ladies like you shouldn't have to dump the garbage. I mean, there were so many sweet moments. We'd sit around and we'd play games. One night when we were playing a game, he had a really bad cold, and he kept sniffling. And I said, oh, I said, Maurice, you're grossing me out. I said, go to the bathroom and go blow your nose. And he looked at me, and he said to me, what do you mean? I said, what do you mean? What do I mean? He said, blow my nose?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized in that instant he did not understand what I was saying to him. And when you think about it, Lauren, parents or loved ones put a tissue up to a child's face, a nose, mm-hmm. and says, and they teach them how to blow their nose.
Yeah.
And Maurice had never experienced that. He had no clue what I was talking about.
Wow. And it's in the small things like that that it really resonates. Right there is another opportunity for gratefulness, right?
Well, you know, one of the favorite stories in the book is the brown paper bag story.
Oh, yes.
And
Please share.
Yeah, we'd see each other on weekends. He'd call me occasionally, and one Saturday he called from my lobby phone, and he asked if I could take him to lunch. He told me he was hungry. And that was about 6 months after we met each other, and I realized that he wasn't eating every day, and I said to him, you know what? I said, we need to figure this out. I said, you need to eat every day. I said, so if you'd like on Monday nights, I can give you money. And you have to be very careful, but I trust that you'll spend it the way you need to. But you need to buy yourself something to eat every single day. I said, or if you'd prefer, on Monday nights, we can go to the supermarket before we have our dinner, and I'll buy you all the things you love to eat. I can make you lunch. I can leave it with the doorman in the morning, because we lived only two blocks apart. And I said, and on your way, I'll leave it with the doorman, and on your way to school, you can swing by and you can pick it up, and at least I'll know that you're eating something every day. And he looked at me, and I said to him, and he said to me, well, if you make me lunch, he said, are you going to put it in a brown paper bag? Mm-hmm. And I was really confused. I said, well, do you want your lunch in a brown paper bag? You don't want your lunch in a brown paper bag. And he said to me, Miss Laura, I don't want your money. He said, I want my lunch in a brown paper bag. He said, because when kids come to school and they have their lunch in a brown paper bag, that means someone cares about them. So something as simple as lunch in a brown paper bag can be so meaningful to a child who doesn't have it. And I've had so many mothers say to me, ever since I read your book and I read that story, when I pack my children's lunch, I see it in a very different light now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something as simple as a lunch in a brown paper bag, you know, can be so precious, but again, are things that we take so for granted.
Yeah.
And that we don't even think about.
I know. And the fact of what that represented to him, mm-hmm. and that you were able to consistently provide that to him, it's like every day he was reminded that someone cares. Because at the heart of it all,
he loved his lunch in a brown paper bag.
Yeah.
I mean, really, I just. So, you know, when I.
And at the heart of it all, don't we all just want to know that we are worthy of love?
Yeah. There are so many children in our country mm-hmm. who are unfortunately having to fend for themselves and are going without the basic of basic needs in their lives. And I have seen that so often through all of the talks that I've done across mm-hmm. the country, and it is amazing.
And there are a number of outreach programs that you're involved in, right? We have about 5 minutes left in the show, and I did want to hit on that. I saw a number of things on your website. Do you want to talk a little bit more about those outreach programs?
Well, one of the big programs that I'm involved with is Share Our Strength, No Kid Hungry, and a portion of the proceeds from An Invisible Thread, the paperback, do go toward that organization. And it's an amazing national organization, and I love it because it is trying to put an end to childhood hunger. No child in our country should go hungry. It's that simple. So I love that organization. Another one of my favorites is the Pajama Program, mm-hmm. and that's Genevieve Patero. She founded the Pajama Program about 16 years ago, and she provides pajamas and books to children across the country that are children in need. And I think mm-hmm. that's an incredible organization. Blessings in a Backpack is another one where mm-hmm. schools work together with volunteers and they fill backpacks with food. So when children go home for the weekend, they'll have something to eat throughout the week. It's hard to imagine that some children, when they leave school on Friday, they might not eat until the following Monday. So there are so many organizations that are trying to make a difference and improve the lives of children who need our support the most.
Mm-hmm. And the programs that you mentioned are, in addition to a few others, are listed on your website, yes?
Yes,
Okay, good. And so people could purchase the book through your website as well as on Amazon, but also could participate in any of these outreach programs through your website. Is that correct?
Yes, would love that. In fact, with regard to the book, my website is laurashroff.com. Of course, I always try to urge your listeners and people who are going to purchase either a copy of An Invisible Thread, An Invisible Thread Christmas Story, or Angels on Earth, to go to their local bookstores. I love these local bookstores, and we, you know, want to support these bookstores, but if they don't have a local bookstore, certainly Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com, you can purchase any of my books. And
great.
I have, I do have a listing of the different Big Brothers, Big Sisters. I mean, there's so many. Be the Match is another. There's so many wonderful organizations that are making a difference. And, you know, I believe it's part of our responsibility to try to help the people who are in need.
Well, and it's wonderful that this, that your book, An Invisible Thread, in particular, is also part of a school initiative, because there's so much that I think that's important about educating people and their youth about all of this, the connection, the helping, the paying it forward, the acts of compassion and kindness, and what we can do to help out.
I absolutely love speaking at schools. It's probably one of my most favorite things to do. And usually when I do speak at a school, I try to incorporate or tie into it a charity, which is really always a lot of fun, and the kids get really involved, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to
That's
say,
great.
Lauren, in my wildest dreams, I never imagined that, you know, an invisible thread would be used as a teaching tool in schools on the power of small acts of kindness and how we can all make a difference in the life of another person by just being kind. And, you know, when I talk about that with students, you know, it's something as simple as inviting someone who's sitting by themselves during lunchtime over to join you.
Mm-hmm.
Or if a child is standing outside at recess all alone, inviting them to play with you, opening up the door. Even something as simple as looking up and saying hello to someone that you normally ignore. These are all small acts of kindness that can make a difference.
Absolutely. And it's easy to do, and like you've said in the beginning of the show, it's so rewarding. It's more than just the giving that for the receiver, it's for the giver as much. Yeah, it's amazing. The book is titled An Invisible Thread, but I see it as many threads, and it's almost as if they're looping back around and through and making connections throughout your life, almost like creating a tapestry of your experience. Would you say the same, Laura?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
We all have invisible thread connections in our lives, and if we just, again, think about them, you'll see that people have come into our lives for a reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're all healers. We enter each other's lives, and people enter our lives. Oh, thank you so much for being with me today, Laura. Again, the book is titled An Invisible Thread. You can purchase it through Laura's website, laurashroff.com, through Amazon, or through your bookseller, which is great. The books that she has available are An Invisible Thread, An Invisible Thread Christmas Story, and Angels on Earth. And Laura, will you come back to join us in the future so we can talk about your book, Angels on Earth?
Oh, I would love that. Absolutely.
Oh, so great. So much to talk about there as well.
Okay.
Fantastic. So in closing, I'd like to thank my guest, Laura Schroff. Thank you for joining me today, Laura. We'll look forward to having you back again. I'd like to thank my sponsor, Full Recovery Wellness Center. And I'd like to thank you for joining me. Set your calendar and tune in next week live at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You don't want to miss the show. Until then, keep it light, smile, act kindly, and enjoy. Good night. know there's a world-class addiction treatment center that accepts most insurance right in Fairfield, New Jersey? The Full Recovery Wellness Center offers substance abuse help with flexible day and evening options. Overcoming addictive behavior is really just the beginning of recovery. The Full Recovery Program offers a holistic approach to improve all areas of your life, from strained relationships to difficult career and financial situations. At Full Recovery, the goal is simple: provide you the tools needed to enjoy a rich and rewarding life. Full Recovery is now offering its exclusive Badge of Honor program, a treatment solution designed to meet the unique privacy needs of New Jersey's first responders and police officers. When relapse is not an option, turn to the state licensed professionals at the Full Recovery Wellness Center, located at 87 Fairfield Road in Fairfield. For more information, 973-244-0022 or at www.full-recovery.com. Full Recovery Wellness Center in Fairfield.
The views and opinions heard on the preceding program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Oldies 107.9 WOLD or SRN Communications.